The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas B. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas B. Gibbs is on the air.
Good evening, my friends. This is Douglas V. Gibbs, Mr. Constitution. It's time for the Mr. Constitution Hour here on KPRZ, KPRZ, 1210 a.m. And we're looking at San Diego County, but you're listening all over the world, aren't you? iHeartRadio, Spotify, the list goes on and on and on. Great to have you here. So where we left off is we finished Article 1 of the Constitution last week, so we're going to move into Article 2, which is the presidency. But I also want to talk about a few other things, and we always do. And when it comes to a number of things that's going on right now, our children is a big deal to us, and so there's been these mandates going on, these questions in the schools, so on and so forth. So rather than sit here and try to explain things, I've decided what I'm going to do for you. For those of you who have seen this or heard this, enjoy it again. But last week, I was under the weather, first of all. So real quick, for those of you who tuned in last Saturday night waiting for the new episode of Mr. Constitution, and they replayed the episode from the prior week, and I came down with something that knocked me for a loop. I was unable to record a show, to do a show, and I just wasn't feeling good. I'm feeling much better now. There's a little bit of a sinus thing going on, but for the most part, I'm done with it. But it's funny because Wednesday evening was when it was really starting to hit me hard, and that's typically also when I record my shows for this program on Saturday nights. And I spoke to a school board, and so you listen to it, or if you know me personally, you could tell that I'm a little off with my voice a little bit because there's a sinus thing going on. But I spoke to, nonetheless, this is also part of the reason we didn't have a show last week, is because I was exhausted and not feeling good after doing this, just simply because my body was doing what it was doing. But I spoke to the Bonzel School Board. They were, had the question up, do we get rid of mask mandates? Do we vaccinate the children? All of that kind of stuff. And I'm not going to get into the semantics. I'm not going to get into the emotions. I'm not going to get into, the science or the lack thereof and opinions and all that. Because when it comes to the Constitution, it's all about liberty. It's all about choice. You have that choice. Wear a mask, don't wear a mask. Get vaccinated, don't get vaccinated. Believe the government and the big pharma, don't believe them. It's a wonderful thing in America. We have liberty. We can make that choice. You can make right choices, wrong choices. It's your choice. And in the Constitution, it protects that. Well, it doesn't really protect it. It's a document, but it enumerates, it talks about that kind of thing. Well, you get the picture. So what I want to do for you here, rather than now spend the next 10 minutes talking about mandates and all of that jazz, is I'm going to play the audio for that speech. So what you're getting ready to hear was a speech that I delivered the last Wednesday, February 16th, 2022, to the Bonzel School District in North San Diego County. And so hopefully this will help illuminate some of your thoughts about mandates, what should or shouldn't be going on, what should be going on legally or constitutionally when it comes to our children and these mandates. Once again, I'm not getting into what the doctors say. I'm not going to get into what they claim science says and all that. I'm not getting into all that. This is not a situation where it's like, oh, mask versus not mask and all that. No, I am simply going to go over the way our children should be treated, what the law says, what is the law, what isn't the law, our mandate's a law. So hang tight. This is what we're going to do right now. I'm going to play that for you. So enjoy the next about 10 minutes of that. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the presidency and what goes on with being a president, the job, what's going on now with our current president, some of the past presidents. So we just passed President's Day, matter of fact, earlier this week, right? Last Monday was President's Day. So I'm going to talk about all of that. And then we're going to start going through Article 2 of the Constitution, which is about the presidency. So all of that today on the program. My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I am Mr. Constitution, DouglasVGibbs.com. Here is that speech to the school board.
Doug Gibbs. Hold on, let me get it. Okay.
Gotcha.
Okay, Mr. Gibbs, you're up.
Floor is yours.
Good evening, board. My name is Douglas V. Gibbs. I am known online as Mr. Constitution. I have been a constitutional instructor since 2008. On January 19th, an attorney visited this board to explain his interpretation of your legal obligations regarding the mask and vaccine mandates. And I have listened to this presentation and I found that it is riddled with legal errors. As citizens, rather than subjects, the government is to serve us, not the other way around. Amendments 5 and 14 of the U.S. Constitution states, no person may be deprived of their life, liberty, or property without due process. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary defines liberty as the state or condition of people who are able to act and speak freely and the power to do or choose what you want to. The 1828 Webster's Dictionary, which was the first American dictionary on the English language, and was actually written by Noah Webster in the hopes that it would help people better understand the U.S. Constitution, defines liberty as freedom from restraint in a general sense and application to the body or to the will or mind. A man enjoys liberty when no physical force operates to restrain his actions or volitions. Natural liberty consists in the power acting as one thinks fit without any restraint or control except from the laws of nature. It is a state of exemption from the control of others. Liberty, in other words, is the freedom to say no. Individual liberties may not be overridden by government dictate without the proper elements of due process present. The lawyer on January 19th said the situation at hand is about jurisdiction. He was correct. There is no federal jurisdiction due to a lack of authority expressly enumerated in the U.S. Constitution. Louis Brandeis, who was appointed to the Supreme Court of the United States in 1916. In 1890, he argued in his Harvard Law Review article that a right to privacy was inherent in American law. To protect Americans in their beliefs, their thoughts, their emotions, and their sensations, the makers of the Constitution conferred, as against the government, the right to be let alone, the most comprehensive of rights and the right most valued by civilized men, end quote. Early in his career, Brandeis also wrote this, the most important political office is that of the private citizen. The Constitution does not begin with we the lawyers, or we the judges, or we the politicians. The iconic words are, we the people. So therefore, the ultimate jurisdiction belongs to those who voted you into office. A governor's executive order and the Health and Safety Code of California do not supersede any and all individual liberties at any time. Mandates are connected to no legislative process. The U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, and the State Constitution of California, Article 4, Section 1, both state that legislative powers, which are the power to make law, modify law, and repeal law, only belong to the legislative departments of government and that those powers are vested in those bodies. Vested means the powers are irrevocable and cannot be given away or transferred for any reason. Sir William Blackstone, in his Commentaries on the Laws, explains that when vest is used as a legal governmental term, the possession of such a legal authority is unalienably vested. In other words, as much as people believe that Governor Newsom was given legislative authority with his mandates, according to our state constitution, he cannot be given that power by the legislature. It is for them to legislate only. Therefore, mandates have no power of law, because it is illegal for the legislature to give the governor or health agencies the power to legislate. The laws of nature and of nature's God, as presented by the Declaration of Independence, the rule of law, in other words, is connected to our God-given rights, and they are self-evident. In short, just because a politician says something is lawful does not mean that it is, especially when it was tyrannically put into place without proper authority in the first place and violates the rule of law. Since mandates are not law, and since they violate the rule of law, not abiding by mandates is not a violation of the law, nor a violation of the Constitution. Adhering to unlawful mandates may place you at risk of being prosecuted, in fact, for enforcing illegal mandates on the children of this school district. Governor Newsom himself realizes that mandates are not law. If you listen to his speeches, he uses the word heed. You will heed these mandates. The word heed, if you look it up, means to take into consideration, according to the dictionary. So even he knows it does not carry the force of law. We must also consider California Code Regulations, Title 9, Section 784.29, the informed consent to medical treatment section of our California regulations. In subsection C, it says no medical treatment may be administered to a client without informed consent, except in an emergency situation as defined by section 853, which I'll get to in a moment, or circumstances otherwise authorized by law. Subsection D says the client has the right to accept or refuse the proposed treatment. That would include wearing a medical device on one's face or something called a vaccine, which may not be the proper term for it. And if he or she consents, has the right to revoke his or her consent for any reason at any time. As for that section 853 I mentioned earlier about emergencies, nothing in this article, this is what it says in the California Code, nothing in this article is intended to prohibit the physician from taking appropriate action in an emergency. An emergency exists when there is a sudden marked change in the patient's condition so that action is immediately necessary for the preservation of the life or the prevention of serious bodily harm to the patient or others, and it is impracticable to first obtain consent. In other words, based on that definition, our children are not in an emergency situation as defined by Section 853. The wearing of medical devices on their faces or any proposed medical procedures that include vaccinations may be denied by their guardians and or parents. As for the 1905 Jacobson v. Massachusetts case that is brought up quite a bit, and the lawyer on January 19th brought it up, the information regarding the ruling was also misleading. In the case, John Marshall Harlan, the Chief Justice of the United States, indicated that individual liberties can be suspended in the case of a community emergency. In his majority opinion, he also explains that the judicial opinion provided only concerned the Massachusetts state constitution. It was not for a countrywide application. The erroneous opinion must be reversed anyway, for it violates the constitution. And we know that that can happen. Just because a judge says something, it can be reversed. It can be changed if it's erroneous. In the 2019 Gamble versus Not United States case, in his judicial opinion, Justice Clarence Thomas stated, according to Blackstone, judges should disregard precedent that articulates a rule incorrectly when necessary to vindicate the old rule from misrepresentation, a decision that is demonstrably erroneous. The court should correct the error regardless of whether other factors support overruling the precedent. Besides, what a judge provides is not law. As Justice Thomas also said in Gamble versus the United States, the judiciary lacks force, in other words, the power to execute the law, and will, the power to legislate. Those powers are vested in the president and Congress, respectively. Daniel Webster was born on January 18, 1782. He died October 24, 1852, and he was an American lawyer and statesman who served in Congress and was U.S. Secretary of State under four presidents. And he said, the Constitution was made to guard the people against the dangers of good intentions. And he was correct. And finally, thank you, the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause calls for all Americans to be treated equally. So I have to ask, and this is a general question for everybody, why are masked and unmasked and the vaccinated and unvaccinated being treated differently? Are we experiencing a new form of discrimination? In the end, I ask you for one thing, board. Think critically. Recognize why you sit there, where you sit, and who the true voice of America is supposed to be, we the people. So as you could hear, I got a few applauses in there at the end. It was actually a standing ovation
What's interesting also is I had gotten there early enough that I set the tone. Only one name had been called before me, and she had offered her time to me. And then there were a number of other people, which I cut out that part of the video, but or the audio, but they were also offering their time to me. And so I wound up with about 10 minutes or so, and it was originally going to be 3 minutes. And then I was expecting each person to give me 3 minutes each. And then when they saw how many people were going to speak or wanted to speak, because this was on the agenda, this discussion about mandates regarding the masks and the vaccines and all of that. When they saw that there was 31 people there that filled out a sheet that said they wanted to speak, they reduced the time to 2 minutes so that they weren't there until, you know, all hours of the night. Wound up being like a 4 hour, 45 minute meeting in total, combined with the other items of the evening. And so I was called up second. So the woman gave me her minutes, then I was called, and then other people gave me their minutes. And then when I got to the end, when I first speak about Daniel Webster, there's a kind of a, sounds like I say Daniel kind of louder than you would expect. It was because I was restarting because another woman had given me 2 minutes to make sure I could complete what I had to say. But anyway, but I was the first person that actually spoke. I set the tone for the night, and I kind of feel like I gave the parents they were already, you know, riled up. They knew what they were going to say. I mean, I'm not going to take credit for anything per se, but I do believe that I helped set the tone and for the parents to be a little bit, I don't know, a little more vocal, a little more confident in their delivery and so on and so forth, because they had me kind of set the tone for the evening. What was interesting is then I had discussions with persons on the board. The superintendent, you know, spoke to me a moment and has indicated that he would like to engage in further conversation in the future. And so it was overall a very good experience, a good opportunity to talk about what we talked about. Here's the thing, though, and I'm sure this is your question. Yeah, but Doug, how did it end? What did they vote? See, there's where it becomes problematic. They kicked the can down the road. They did not vote on it. They decided they would wait to see what Sacramento is going to do. And the whole point of my speech and everybody else's speech was this. We live in a country of liberty. And that's not just individual liberties of the people, but also of local governments and local bodies. Localism. The higher up governments can't dictate what the local government does regarding local issues. The school districts can tell the state no. They can say, you know what, we're going to implement that. We think for our school or our schools in our district, this is the best tack to take. One size fits all does not always necessarily work. If one school district believes they do need to wear masks, but another one says, no, we're in a situation that's different, they should be able to make the decision not to, and so forth. So these school districts and these schools, they do have the option to say, you know, no, we're not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to recommend they do anything. I'm not a lawyer. Matter of fact, I'm asked all the time, I said, Doug, you know so much about the Constitution. Are you a lawyer? And I say, no, and that's why I know so much about the Constitution. But I do understand the law, and I do recognize the Constitution, the state Constitution, and the federal Constitution, and what it allows, and what the system is doing, and what's going on here. And in the end, ultimately, the reality is these schools, these school districts, they do have the authority to say, you know what, your rules that you expect to just generally paint across the board everybody to be, it doesn't work for us, and we're going to do something different. And there are a couple of school districts in California that have gone against the mandate, and guess what? They didn't lose their funding. They still got their funding. So this, it's an idle threat. No politician wants to be known to keep money from the children for any reason. Could you imagine the headlines? Oh, California refuses to give money to school district over masks, and the children now have no ability to, you know, I mean, it would get bad for them. It really would. So it was a good experience. I enjoyed delivering it. What's interesting is I now have parents from four other school districts that want me to speak to their boards, and I'll be working on that in the near future. And the speeches will be similar, not exactly the same. If you're on my email list, I'll you know, you can stay posted. I'll send you out the information. In fact, to join my email list, is, oh gosh, Doug, you have an email list? Absolutely I do. Now, be warned, you join this email list, you're not just going to get articles and videos, you're also going to get reminders for all my classes. And if you don't live in the area, you're like, well, why do I want reminders of the classes? Because in those reminders are the handouts. You get these handouts for free if you're on my email list. I send them out, and they're associated with each class. So there are 6 classes during the week, so you will get at least 6 emails just for the classes. But they will have the handouts in them. You'll also get a reminder for my Patriot Street Fighter program on Tuesdays. You'll also get a reminder for this show and my radio program on KMET 1490 AM. But then in addition to all that, you also get, every once in a while, I'll shoot you out an article or a list of links for articles I've been writing or videos, things like that. That's all part of the email list. So if you want to be on the email list, if you go to douglasvgibbs.com, on the right-hand side, it says, you know, join our email list, click here. If you go to politicalpistachio.com, on the sidebar there on the right, scroll down. It's a, I believe, a maroon-colored looking button. Says sign up for the email list. Hit that. Put in your information, and you'll start getting emails. I understand that people don't like to get swamped with emails, but I've got so much information to give. Be aware, it is an active email list. You're going to get some just about every day. I try not to flood you. I'm not going to send out, you know, 18 emails in a day and all asking for money or something. I don't do that. But I will be sending out emails regularly. Typically, I don't ask for funds. I do every once in a while. On rare occasion, there'll be an email saying, hey, I've got a financial need here, really need the help. But it's not often because, to be honest with you, the listeners and readers of what I do, followers of what I do, they're constantly purchasing books, T-shirts, participating in donations, some of them. Some folks, you know, that's a $5 a month or $20 a month, just, you know, out of helping out. Oh, I don't know if the word donation's right. I guess contribution to help out the efforts. And if you want to help out the nonprofit part of what I do, Constitution Association, you can go to constitutionassociation.com. All right, enough of that stuff. Now, we've talked about the speech. I've talked about a little bit about who and what and all that I am. Now, let's get a little bit further down the road. We've gotten to Article 2 in the Constitution. We are going through the Constitution on this program. So if you're new to the program, go to iHeartRadio or my podcast page. You can go to douglasvgibbs.com/radio, and you can find it there. You can go to Spotify, Apple. There's all kinds of places where there's a list of past episodes. And the first, oh, I don't know, maybe a dozen episodes or 2 dozen episodes of this program that I began last year, we just talked about Christianity and the Constitution and the Founding Fathers. Then we got to the point where, okay, it's time to start going through the Constitution. So we've been going through the Constitution. You can go back to past episodes, check out what you missed. But I do talk about other things in addition, too. And so we've gotten to Article 2, which is the presidency. And so, since we're going to talk about the president, let's talk about a few things that's going on right now with our president. So we have one of the biggest news right now. And once again, this is the February, Saturday of February, the February 26th episode on K-Praise 2022, for those of you who are listening to this in some future date, you know, through iHeart or my podcast page or whatever. But what's going on is Ukraine was just invaded by Russia. Brand new in the news. Also, with the truckers going on in Canada, the, you know, premier, prime minister, whatever you call him, Trudeau up there in Canada, has just lifted the Emergency Powers Act. And here in America, we've got a presidency that thinks that it has emergency powers, can do what it needs to do in order to, you know, save the day. And they will tell you that a large part of that is Jacobson v. Massachusetts, which you heard me mention in that speech, 1905, where the Supreme Court by a 7-2 majority said, hey, Massachusetts could fine residents who refused to receive a smallpox vaccination or injection. 1901, smallpox epidemic had swept through that part of the country. And if you didn't get it, then you were subject to a $5 fine. And a pastor, Pastor Henning Jacobson, suggests that he and his son both were injured by previous vaccines, so he refused to be vaccinated, and he refused to pay the fine. Why should I have to pay a fine for protecting myself? And he argued that the vaccine law violated the Massachusetts and federal constitution. And state courts, including Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, rejected his claims. And so he went before the Supreme Court, and he argued that the compulsion to introduce disease into a healthy system is a violation of liberty. I'll go even a step further. Liberty is just your ability to make a choice. So any decision to force you to do anything against your will is a violation of liberty. And the Supreme Court, February 20th, 1905, understand something. That means less than a week ago was the anniversary of that decision. Remember, February 20th, 1905. And when this broadcast is on the air, February 26th, so 6 days ago was the anniversary of that decision. And in the Supreme Court, Chief Justice, said, for the good and welfare of the Commonwealth, meaning Massachusetts, in which a legislature is primarily the judge, it is the basis on which the police power rests in Massachusetts. Upon the principle of self-defense, of paramount necessity, a community has the right to protect itself against an epidemic of disease that which threatens the safety of its members. So what he was basically saying was, the safety of the community or the choice of the community outweighs the choice of the individual. Now, I'm not going to get more into that case because this is not about arguing that case. This is about arguing a point here. And here's the point. What John Marshall Harlan, that Chief Justice, is arguing is community over individualism, collectivism over individual liberties. And collectivism, if you really think about it, and if you know your history, that is the basis of socialism, communism, and a lot of these other isms that seem to be attacking us from all directions. So, and as a Christian, as a pastor, he recognized the problem. Because the thing is, when you're a Christian, is you see things that other people don't see. Because, I think I've talked about this on the show before. You know, I worked at a credit union for years, and I handled a lot of money. And when you handle a genuine article, it's easy to spot the fakes. When you, as a Christian, your whole life is enveloped in the genuine article, you know when something is the fake, when it's not of God. Everything in our life is one of two things. Either it's from God or it's from somewhere else. It's either godly or it's Luciferian. And he knew that being compelled by force, against his will, for this, whether or not the vaccine was good for him is not the point. The fact that it was being pushed on him against his will was unconstitutional. Was it not godly? It was a wrong thing. And he argued that. And Harlan, the Chief Justice, John Marshall Harlan, says, no, you may be compelled by force, if need be, against your will, without regard to your personal wishes or your pecuniary interests, or even your against your religious or political convictions, because this country, the community, is more important than you alone. So if there's something threatening the whole, the individual must participate in what we say is good for the whole. But what if you're wrong? And what if I think you're wrong? I'm supposed to, because it's an emergency, just do what I'm forced to do. Now, once again, I don't want this to become a war between masked and unmasked, vaccinated or unvaccinated, whether or not COVID is this or that or in between, whether or not it's deadly or not. I believe it's a disease. I believe it kills people. I know two people that it killed. I believe it's a deadly thing. I know more people that the vaccine has killed, though. So it concerns me even more than COVID. But I'm not going to get into those semantics. I'm just talking about the law. If you disagree, should you be forced, should you be compelled by force, against your personal wishes, against what you believe is your interest, your religious or political convictions, to have administered upon you something that you disagree with in the name of good intentions and the community, the safety of the community? No, that's not liberty. Liberty is your freedom to say no. Liberty, well, Doug, yeah, but what about all the lives of the other people that don't hang out with me, then don't go to the same places I go to. Now, there are some businesses that say, well, if you're not wearing a mask, you can't come in. Fine. I'll go to the businesses that say I can come in without a mask. If you have a problem with those businesses, don't go there. Go to the ones that demand you wear a mask. Let the society take care of it. Let culture take care of it. I have no problem if a business takes makes a decision and it compels me to have to shop elsewhere. Because you know what? That's their business. Make your decision. But understand, if you make that decision, you're either going to reap the benefits or the consequences of that decision. And that goes with anything in life and with the Constitution and as a Christian. Things have consequences. There are, for every cause and action, there's an opposite reaction, right? There's a reaction to everything, and maybe not necessarily opposite, but there's always a consequence. You make a decision, there's going to be a consequence. That's life. So make a decision, but don't force me to make a decision different than what I believe. If you're worried, if you're scared, then lock down yourself. Don't go out. Don't lock down because government told you to. Lock down because that's your decision. Now, if you say, hey, I don't think the lockdown makes sense, then go out in the public. Yeah, but Doug, those people will die. Yeah, but it was their decision. There's consequences to your decisions. And if they believe that's their best move, let them make it. And if there's someone out there that says, you know what? I agree with that person. I'm going to have my business open so they can shop here. Let them do it. Same thing with the schools. Well, gosh, Doug, I don't want my child to go to a school where they're taking off the mask or where they're wearing the mask. Then find a school, a private school, something where it's different. But I can't afford it. Well, that's the reason why we need to have school choice. And there's this idea that you have to go to the public school is ridiculous anyway. You know, and I'm paying tax dollars for that. I want my tax money back so I can send my kid to where I want to send them. School choice is hopefully going to be on the ballot. There's a push for that right here in California. That's a nationwide thing. That's a different story. I'm not going to get into it right now. So we have, based on my speech, based on this case in 1905, an interesting debate, don't we? In the end, it comes down to liberty. In the end, it comes down to choice. In the end, it comes down to what I want to make that for my own decision. All right, now that we've said all that, we still haven't started on Article 2 yet or talked about the presidency, have we? So let's take a break. When we come back, the presidency. Matter of fact, I want to talk a little bit about the Ukraine and how the president should have responded from a constitutional standpoint and from George Washington's thinking. And then we'll get into Article 2. So stay with me. Don't turn the dial. Don't get out of the vehicle just yet. You know, you're on your way home. Keep it on this radio station. You're sitting in your driveway, didn't want to turn it off. This is your opportunity to run in, turn on the radio in the house, or decide to stay in your car. Or you're listening to the podcast. This is your opportunity to pause it, go get something, maybe listen to some very cool ads. They're my ads. I don't have any advertisers. This is funded by listeners. You want to help? DouglasVGibbs.com, PoliticalPistachio.com. Hit the donate button. Help out funding this program. I'm paying for this. There's no sponsors. I don't want to be beholden to any sponsors. I don't want any company saying, well, I'm giving you money for your show, so quit talking about that. Not going to happen. So if you want to help out, now during this break, run to your computer. DouglasVGibbs.com, PoliticalPistachio.com. Drop a few coins in the jar. Appreciate it because, for the most part, my Constitution classes that I teach pays for the show. But anyway, let's take a break. When we come back, Article 2. Ukraine, presidential powers, war powers, what should the president do, so on and so forth. All of that when we come back. So stay with us.
This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Our records indicate you've been lied to. Welcome to the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
All I'm offering is the truth, nothing more.
If you are enjoying this program on K-Praise, Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas V. Gibbs, understand something. This is not all I do. DouglasVGibbs.com, PoliticalPistachio.com. I have written 7 books. I have 2 AM radio programs, one on Saturdays between 1 and 3 Pacific on KMET 1490 AM, and I have this one here on K-Praise.
And then I have 3 YouTube channels. I have YouTube channels, the books, and, oh, and 6 classes in Southern California on the U.S. Constitution. 2 in San Diego County, 2 in Orange County, 2 in Riverside County. Check out the classes page at politicalpistachio.com or douglasvgibbs.com. And if you want to contact me, let me know you love the show. Let me know that you have a question, something like that. Feel free to email me at constitutionspeaker@yahoo.com, constitutionspeaker@yahoo.com. I appreciate you as a listener. I appreciate you as a reader. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you, constitutionspeaker@yahoo.com, douglasvgibbs.com, and politicalpistachio.com. My books are available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. Go to, once again, one of my websites to read which books you would like to buy at the books link. Once again, thank you for listening. Thanks again for being a part of the Mr. Constitution Hour. And God bless America, my friends. God bless you. Creator by Douglas V. Gibbs is on sale now. His 8th book, A True Action Plan for Christians When It Comes to Restoring the Republic. The keystone of American liberty is the Creator. Without a godly foundation, like an arch without its keystone, our whole system comes crumbling down. Thanks to age-old ideologies and an ancient lust for power and wealth, once again, our world is upside down. Evil has become good, and good has become evil. The churches have been infiltrated, and the rule of law has been replaced by the rule of man. To restore our liberty and the virtuous nature of our country, we must understand what is happening and what to do. Creator is a book that illuminates the realities that swirl around the foundation of American liberty and addresses 7 critical issues directly related to our system of liberty that we must understand, address, and fight. For if we are to reestablish our American way of life on a foundation and cornerstone based on the founding fathers' beliefs in our Creator, and as Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration of Independence, the laws of nature and of nature's God, whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it. It is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. That was in the Declaration of Independence, and now our time has come upon us. Now it is our turn. How do we address what is going on? What are the true causes of the rise of tyranny in America? What steps must we take as a people to keep the republic? It all begins with our Creator. On sale now by Douglas V. Gibbs. Learn more at Amazon.com or douglasvgibbs.com/store.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
Tired of the lies? Come here for the truth. Douglas V. Gibbs.
Okay, welcome back. So in the news this week, the Ukraine has been invaded by Russia. The Biden administration is trying to figure out what to do. We want to be strong militarily, but we don't want to jump into everything. And we don't know if we should be getting involved in what's going on between Russia and Ukraine. Should we defend Ukraine? They're a NATO member, or are they? Should they be? And when it comes down to it, we also have to ask ourselves this question. Does it directly influence our part of the world or what we're up to? So we must ask ourselves, first of all, what was the purpose of NATO? NATO, or part of its function, is to keep global peace. And the members of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, NATO, the members agreed to come to each other's aid in the event of an armed attack against another member state, especially against or by Russian expansion into Europe, the Russia. So the whole point of NATO is to guard against Russia in the first place. So then the question is, okay, so we're a part of NATO. We're worried about Russian expansion. Of course, this goes back to the Soviet Union when it was the communism and all that jazz. How does that apply now? Well, Russia
it has been against Ukraine joining NATO. NATO has been wanting to join NATO. Russia asked for assurance from NATO that the Ukraine would not be allowed to join NATO, but the demand was rejected by the West, by the European countries and the United States. And for ever since, you know, the Cold War, ever since, you know, what we saw with the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc countries, and all, tensions have been rising in Eastern Europe ever since then, and especially lately, because Russia seems to have been moving into separatist regions of Ukraine and so forth. It's as if Putin would like to reassemble the Soviet Union. And so the Russian president, which previously asked for confirmation that Ukraine will not join NATO, has now moved against Ukraine. Ukraine is located in an area that is pretty much between the Eastern Bloc countries and Russia, just south of Belarus and Estonia, not Belarus, yeah, I think it's Belarus, but Estonia and Latvia and all that. It's just south of that. But anyway, so that's what we're looking at. So now the question is, well, is Ukraine in NATO? And if not, why not? They're not. Not technically, officially. And I'll give you a rundown of all of the details about that in a minute. But despite NATO being present in Ukraine, and the Ukraine contributing towards NATO missions, the country is still not officially a member. And the president of Ukraine, which, you know, and don't get me, Ukraine's government is a dictatorship also. It's not exactly a bunch of good guys. So let's not be like, oh, poor Ukraine, you know, we got this wonderful Western-style democracy or republic, you know, being attacked by, you know, the big, mean, you know, Russia who wants to become the Soviet Union again. While, in a sense, that's correct, it really isn't. Ukraine is not exactly this, you know, westernized, you know, country. It also, along with a bunch of other countries that are, they have dictatorships. Now, that said, Ukraine has had a better relationship with us than, well, Russia and a lot of other countries. And Ukraine and Georgia, which is just south of Ukraine, they've been working on joining NATO because they fear Russia. They want to be a part of our group because they fear Russia. And so, and the president of Ukraine originally, way back in 2010, when he was elected, he was actually against the Ukraine joining the alliance, the NATO. He wanted them to remain non-aligned. You know, that way you kind of can have the best of both worlds. You can kind of get to know Russia a little bit, get to know NATO a little bit. They're both kind of, you know, trying to court you into their side of the map or whatever. So until the Russian annexation of Crimea in 2014, it wasn't that big of a deal. Suddenly, 2014, where Russia, you know, attacked Crimea and annexed it into Russia, the Ukrainian government's like, whoa, wait a second, these guys, they're taking land. We're next. Suddenly, public support for joining NATO in Ukraine went up. And in June of 2021, NATO leaders were like pushing, hey, Ukraine will eventually become a member. We just have to, you know, do what we got to do. There's a process, you know, there's, you know, we want to get careful here, and so on and so forth, and da-da-da-da-da-da. So, that's kind of the situation, really, at the moment. Now, understand that on the 10th of March of 2018, NATO did add Ukraine in the to the list of NATO aspiring members. And, I mean, relations between NATO and the Ukraine, it goes all the way back to the early 90s, and has since developed into one of the most substantial of NATO's partnerships. And like I said, since 2014 with Crimea, cooperation between Ukraine and NATO has intensified in critical areas. That all said, let's go over a little bit about that long list of things that have happened. So cooperation, independent Ukraine joined the North Atlantic Cooperation Council in 1991, the Partnership for Peace Program in 1994, and relations were strengthened with the signing of the 1997 Charter on a Distinctive Partnership, which established a NATO-Ukraine Commission, NUC, to take cooperation forward. 2009 declaration to complement the NATO-Ukraine Charter mandated the NUC through Ukraine's annual national program and was designed to underpin Ukraine's efforts to take forward reforms aimed at implementing Ukraine's Euro-Atlantic aspirations in line with the decisions of the 2008 NATO summit in Bucharest. So cooperation deepened over time, mutually beneficial, at least that's the way it's been seen, with Ukraine actively contributing to NATO-led operations and missions. And so priority was given to support comprehensive reform in the security and defense sector to kind of bring Ukraine along, you teach them to be a little more democratic, all that jazz. And in response to the Russian-Ukraine conflict in 2014, once again, we've got the Crimea situation, in which allies were condemning what Russia was doing, and there was a destabilizing and aggressive activities in eastern Ukraine and the Black Sea region. The NATO increased its presence in the Black Sea and stepped up maritime cooperation with Ukraine and Georgia. And I have a friend of mine who, in the military, he was sent to Ukraine to teach them how to shoot. So we stepped up our cooperation with Ukraine to help them. Once again, maybe not the best government in the world, but you know, the enemy of your, the enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of thing, maybe. But since the NATO summit in Warsaw in July of 2016, NATO's practical support for Ukraine is set out in the comprehensive assistance package for Ukraine. And then in 2017, Ukrainian parliament adopted legislation reinstating membership or desire for membership in NATO as a strategic foreign and security policy objective. In 2019, a corresponding amendment to the Ukraine's constitution entered into force September 2020. So we're talking a couple, a year and a half ago, President Zelensky approved Ukraine's new national security strategy, which provided for the development of a distinctive partnership with NATO with the aim of membership in NATO. So no, they're not a member of NATO, but there's been a lot of moves in that direction to try to bring them aboard. So now, that's the scenario. Now we have a president of the United States. Okay, what do we do? They're not technically a part of the treaty, but we have a relationship. If they were in the treaty, we would definitely have to come to their aid. Not being a part of the treaty, boy, that's a that is a tight wire to walk on, isn't it? Do you help them? Do you not? Okay, well, now, President George Washington said two things very interesting. He said, the best way to prepare for the best way to preserve the peace is to be prepared for war. Strength through peace, or peace through strength, I mean. So, yeah, I mean, just like Ronald Reagan, right? Strength through peace, or peace through strength. Why do I keep reversing it? So, strength, peace through strength. George Washington said it, so did Reagan, all right? But also, George Washington warned against getting involved in foreign entanglements. We don't want to get entangled in foreign things that are not about us. We don't need to be spending our money and resources in wars that do nothing for us, don't influence us. It's a fight between whoever is in the fight. So the question is that what applies here? Is that not what we should be doing? Now, when it comes to Article 2 of the U.S. Constitution, we're going to tie all this in now. The executive power shall be vested in the President of the United States of America. Executive power being the power to execute the laws. There are other executive powers when it comes to war, and we'll get to that. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the Vice President, chosen for the same term, be elected as follows, and then it gets into the electors and electoral college, which I will talk about some other time. Then it says in Article 2, Section 2, the President shall be Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy of the United States and of the militia of the several states when called into the actual service of the United States. He may require the opinion in writing of the principal officer of each executive department upon the subject relating to the duties of their respective offices. And yet he shall... Okay, so if war is at hand... If war is at hand, then he can say, hey, military officials in my cabinet, talk to me, and they shall. He can make a decision. Can he go to war without Congress saying, yes, it's okay? He could. He's commander-in-chief. He is the guy who decides whether or not the military may be deployed or not. But if they don't like it in Congress, they can starve it of money, and then it ends it real fast. So from war powers point of view, the president can't make a decision. Now, here's what you all been waiting for. Should he? I don't know, because we don't know what's going on when it comes to the geopolitical situation. I agree that Russia's bad. I also agree that we shouldn't be going out of our way to get into a tit for tat with them. I don't think we should be getting into these things willy-nilly. I don't think war is a great answer. And here's something that's come to mind, and I want you to think about this. With about a couple minutes left here, I want you to think about what I'm getting ready to say. Is it possible that war is exactly what both sides want? Because, you know, war can be profitable. Investments can be paid. War also tends to be good for political popularity. Is it possible? I'm not saying this is the case. I'm just asking a question. Is it possible that our current administration and the administration of Russia, the Putin administration, have come to agreement? They've come to an agreement that, hey, let's have a war with each other for show. Let's make lots of money. Let's get some popularity. We'll make it so that nobody really wins, but we both look good. Is that possible? Is it possible it's all about their wallets? Is it possible that what's going on right now is not really what's going on right now? Is it possible the banking system, the bankers, the investors, the bomb makers, the military people, is it possible that these people have colluded together, conspired together to make war for profit? I'm going to leave it at that. When we come back next week, we'll continue through Article 2. We'll have more to talk about. United we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America, and God bless you, my friends. Think about what I had to say from a constitutional standpoint, too. Would it be in our interest to get into this little bickering thing? Or could it be, once again, I'll say it one more time, could it be that's exactly what they want and it was planned on? Is it possible? Am I saying it is? Not saying it isn't. I'm just asking a question. All right, united we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America, my friends. God bless you. We'll see you next week right here on Mr. Constitution Hour on KPRZ, K-Praise, your Christian station in San Diego County, and your Mr. Constitution show around the world online. Great having you here. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week. God bless. Creator by Douglas V. Gibbs. My latest book on sale now, douglasvgibbs.com/store. The world is upside down and inside out. Evil has become good, good has become evil, and the churches have been infiltrated. We need to restore our liberty, and we can. Creator is the book that goes over the very foundation of our system and addresses 7 pivotal issues we must understand, address, and fight for as we reestablish our American way of life with a foundation and cornerstone based on the belief in our Creator. douglasvgibbs.com/store. Creator by Douglas V. Gibbs.
General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.